deep in the heart of the Welsh valleys, a young man had a deceptively young and unfathomably handsome man had decided that it was his destiny to become the greatest dog agility handler the world had ever seen. So he set about learning his craft. His front crosses were crisper than a dry December morning in the Brecon Mountains. His catchkers were slicker than a boiled pigeon in a rubber tube sock. The intensity, accuracy and speed and natural flamboyance he brought far surpassed anything the sport had ever seen and would ever likely see again. The time was approaching where he would be ready to shine on the world stage and begin his legacy. But he realized, to win any battle, you must first know your enemy.
Welcome along, everyone, and it is good to be back. On today's episode, we have European and world champion Dalton Meredith, or Meredith, as he corrected me in the episode. I think it's a Welsh-English thing. Anyway, I hope you enjoy that episode, but first I really want to just take a quick moment to talk about a course that I'm currently running called Couch to Clear Runs. It is absolutely perfect for anyone who is thinking about getting into fitness but don't know where to start, or someone who used to be in fitness, used to have a fitness plan, but has no structure, so they need something to help them get back into it. This course focuses on doing only what you can, and it takes away the unrealistic expectations that we sometimes see on social media. All you need to do is show up every time, focus on doing what you can do, do that, and be proud that you are doing that, because that is what is going to get you to where you need to be. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me. If you have any other questions, feel free to reach out, send me a message, or send me an email, and I will be happy to get back to you. Without making you wait any longer, here's Dalt. Welcome along, everyone, for another episode of Know Your Enemy. And this week, I finally got him on. After weeks and weeks of chasing him down, I've managed to tie him in, and we've got him. It is the European Open and Agility World Championship gold medalist at intermediate, Dalton Meredith. Welcome, Dalt. How are you doing, mate?
Thanks. That was quite an intro.
I know. I needed some music behind it to make it like even bigger fanfare for you, didn't I?
I was expecting a little bit of music background coming on.
I'll add it in the post-production. So, we know who you are. If you were introducing yourself, or if you were explaining who you are to someone who doesn't know you, how would you describe yourself today?
That's nothing special, definitely. I don't think I give myself that much of an intro.
Imagine you introduced yourself like that to everyone.
Yeah, I'm on a training day. Welcome, guys. Do you realise that? No, I just a normal lad, I guess.
Lad.
Just started dog. Yeah, just a dog trainer from Bristol. That's it, really. There's nothing that much more exciting.
Well, you've got your own business now, so you're a business owner as well.
Yeah, we got a business with me and my partner Jodie. We've set up a business. Hopefully, you know, to like the dog training is really fun, but hopefully this is like another side to venture into. I've been doing dog training for quite a few years now, so eventually you sort of get to the point where you're not bored, but you want to do something maybe else, you know, to like improve yourself as well.
For sure. And, you know, you said you've been doing it for quite a while. So were you a dog trainer before agility, or was it dog trainer? You know, how did it come about for you?
Yeah. Well, actually, weirdly, I was working at Lidl's for, I think I did 9 years. And I left college, didn't really bother with the uni, went to Lidl's, and I did most of my career at Lidl's and worked my way up from store assistant all the way up to a deputy manager. Not deputy, that was way higher. No, not quite that high. I went to a duty manager, and then I started to do assistant manager. And I did the assistant manager of like the store training for, I think, maybe 2 or 3 years. And I was in the last stages of working there, and realized how much I disliked like the, you know, that sort of lifestyle. Go just basically living to work for someone else in an office. So not an office, but, you know, somewhere where you're constantly the same thing every single day.
So how did you get into dogs then?
Yeah, so my parents, or my mum especially, she's had dogs all her life. She did dog training, And I started off the same as probably most people that are doing well today with the, you know, like with my Labrador in the club with sausage fingers going through the weaves, walking backwards, and then got addicted to it. I think the real turning point was when I got my first Border Collie. I think I was about 18. It was Noz. Yeah, that really changed things. That did. Actually, probably more like 20. Yeah.
When you started, so you got your Border Collie Noz. Did you get him knowing you were going to do agility, or was it something you got into after getting him, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I don't think I was intending to really do agility like I've done now with Noz. It was just more the fact that we did agility anyway. I've always wanted my own dog. We got, and then, it sort of fell into place like that. But obviously that led to getting another Border Collie, and now like seven down the line.
Yeah.
seems normal.
So you are currently full time in agility, right? As in like a trainer.
Yeah.
You don't work in Lidl anymore.
No, thank God.
When you first started then, was it a club that you went to, or was there a particular person that was like the biggest influence on you with regards to your training? Who were like the people who kind of inspired you and influenced the way that you went about things?
Yeah, so it was a club. It was a local club down the road. But actually, the funny thing is, when I did the agility back then, like my biggest role model was Anthony Clark.
Okay.
Because obviously he was at the time, Ant was like not much older than myself. I think he might have even been younger. But obviously Ant was getting huge successes in agility. And it looked really cool, you know. I wanted to look that cool.
Still trying.
Yeah, still trying. But yeah, that was what really got me going on the serious. I think the more serious and competitive side of agility was that. Like seeing someone else a similar age to you getting results and like, you know, how good it looked. Especially when, like, if you're not doing any other sports or something and there's one thing that you're doing and you can get like good results, it becomes addictive.
Yeah. So you, like I said, at that age, obviously Ant was like the biggest influence to you in competition. Was there anyone who really helped your training, the way that you look at training? Because I know that, like, I train with you a lot. We train together. And I know how you train. And, like, you've got a really good eye for it. So where did you learn that?
I think just, I don't know, just, like, natural progression over the years. Always trying, like, as we've gotten to this point now, try and expose myself to different, like, trainers or, you know, influences from abroad. I think potentially is probably the biggest ones. Like, staying up to date with, like, what's going on. Also, like, we book on to, you know, guest trainers as soon as they come over from other countries and then experience, like, what they're doing. And then you sort of take little bits on board. I think to get to what I've learned today, I couldn't really say it's just one person. Obviously, there's lots of people that are doing good dog agility, but you sort of take on a little bit from every single person you see. And then you create your own sort of style, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean... When I ask this next question, it's usually different for different people, but for you, I am talking specifically about this year because it has been a successful year competition-wise for you. As I said in the intro, you know, Clippy's the first dog ever in intermediate anyway. I don't know if there's ever been another dog in another height that's won EOs and AWCs in the same year. Do you know?
I'm not sure. I didn't. There's some people were talking about it, but I'm always like this. Like, some people were going to have a look, but I totally forgot and didn't even look to see if there was another dog that had done it. I just but I'm not sure that anyone's done EOs and AWC back to back, even in a different height, potentially medium. I'm not sure about the other heights, so I'm really not sure. Someone did say they think I was Clippy was one of the first dogs to do it, even out of intermediate.
Yeah.
I know people have won multiple times through different years, but maybe not the same year. Yeah. In AWC.
Well, it was a successful year either way, and that's the point I'm making.
It wasn't bad.
What do you put your success down to then? Do you think it's purely the training? Do you think it's the handling that you do? Do you think it's the dog? Where do you kind of put the success down to? And then what do you think is your greatest strength?
Yeah, and loads. There's got to be so many things. Obviously, Clippy is, no matter what I do in my training, she's obviously clever. Like, she is really clever. You do get some dogs that are just special, I think. But then, like, as a teacher, as myself, I see dogs that are special all the time, that I think with people, like, wow, that dog could be incredible. But it doesn't mean they're going to be. So I do think there's obviously extra bits that we did. But I couldn't really say what it is. I don't really know what it is. I've always been really fortunate with my dogs that they've always been, I'm not going to say good, but I think I've understood them really well.
You've been fortunate, but you can't be fortunate for every dog. Yeah. It's partly your training, yeah. You know?
Yeah, like I think I just understand my dogs really well. Like a good example is, like, I'm not going to say it about anyone, it's no one in particular, but sometimes you can see some dogs running or training with people in the beginning, and you think, wow, yeah, that dog's got a lot of potential, and then something changes, whatever it is, like you would never know from an outside point of view because you can't see that dog's everyday life, everyday routine, everyday training. But I always feel like with my dogs, I always manage to sort of keep them on the pointers to where they're always like sort of improving, or they're staying at a level that I'm happy with. And I honestly don't know. I think it is just a little bit of understanding your own dogs. I think that's probably the biggest thing, actually.
We talk about it a little bit as well, don't we, with regards to things that we see people doing that we think may necessarily not help in the long run. But if you were going to say, there's one thing that you see people doing lots that you think would be the easiest fix for them to make their improvements a lot easier, what's the one mistake you see lots of people making? And I know you're asking. I want other people to hear it.
Oh, that's a hard one, that is. So one thing that I think that people could all do, or people do in general, that make things worse in their dog training.
Yeah.
So if it was like a trained scenario, and we're talking about a dog that's already running and doing really well, the biggest thing I always think that people do, but see, this isn't, I can't really say this because I feel like that is, I don't know, but I always feel like people ask for too much, like confusion, or bring confusion into like the equation with the dog training. So I think with me, I don't know, like I've seen this before online, but I think Susan Garrett posted about it a long time ago, but about lazy dog trainers having really crazy or motivated dogs. And I think that in a certain aspect, I do feel like sometimes people that maybe ask not too much, but bring in too much thought-provoking stuff for dogs, can potentially end up causing more problems than maybe if they just hadn't even thought of that in the first place. Yeah. Like, I know that you need to correct problems and fix things when your dogs are not doing it well and stuff like that, but sometimes I feel like a lot of the time, a lot of with people that I not train, not saying all the people I train, but I see it a lot, that sometimes a problem that would never have existed becomes a problem, and the dog's not encouraged that problem at all. Like, that is all down to the person who's training the dog. And sometimes I think to myself, like, why? Like, just, you didn't even need to start that. And then it just adds on to another thing, and then another thing, and then it becomes this sort of cycle where you get, like, progression of problems or overthinking or...
Yeah, it's like they got, like, too high an expectation on their dog, and then they create a dog that's unsure almost, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of my biggest traits... and I will admit this, is I'm not lazy, but I'm lazy in terms of dog training when it comes to like planning. So like a lot of my dog training or my plans in my dog training is all in my head. Like if I feel like I need to do something, it's not something that I've scheduled myself to do. It will be, I know I need to do this. It just sort of then happens in my training.
Yeah.
Where I think sometimes too much planning, depends. It really does depend, though. That's why I said I couldn't say it for everyone, because that really works for some people. But, you know, I do see it a lot where there's too much gone into it, and then it actually ends up making it worse.
Like, again, the thing for me...
So think less.
Yeah, think less and just let the dogs do a little bit more.
Yeah, think less sometimes. Like, but then, again, that's hard for some people to think less. I'm lucky. I don't really think that much.
Yeah. Well, I think it is... The thing is, though, like I know that you're downplaying it a little bit, but I think you're aware of what is beneficial. And then it's just a case of, it's not that you're not thinking about it, but you're purposely making that decision not to overthink things, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. I think it just, unfortunately, it just comes naturally to me. I don't have to overthink it. Like, that's what I said to you. If I've never had, I don't think I've even had a single training plan with one of my dogs ever. Maybe I did when I, so when I first got into agility, about like seriously about eight years ago after the nozzle, my second collie Costa, someone was like, oh, you need a training plan, you need to do this. I think it lasted about a week. Like, it just didn't work out for me.
Yeah, well, it's whatever you're doing, it's definitely working, isn't it? And again, we're going to look now kind of in the competition side of things, the mental side of things. Like I said, you were in the EOs this year, you were in the AWCs, and after going to the EOs and doing well, I know that you said they felt less pressure on the AWCs, but you know, there's definitely some pressure, especially in the team events. And I think a massive part of dog agility, especially at the top level, is being able to handle that pressure. So how much do you work on your mental preparation and the resilience and your ability to cope with that pressure? And then what do you do?
For EOs, coming into EOs, I didn't really do much, except for probably just exposure to competitions like in our own countries. Like, I think the only thing that I've done that allowed me to sort of handle the mental pressure was just force myself to do other competitions wherever we've been abroad. I've been abroad like a couple of times to do some competitions over there, or big competitions in England. I think that's probably the biggest thing that I did, because anything else except for that, like, there wasn't really anything that I did do, I'm not gonna lie. I just sort of, you know, just felt like it was a competition that I was going to. And maybe the perspective of like how I looked at it, I sort of just made each thing just a competition in my head, as in like, oh, it's not this huge event that I'm going to. That really helped me. And then, so when I got there, I didn't feel as pressured. For AWC, everyone was like, oh, do you feel more pressure now that you've won the EOs? But like I said to you, I honestly thought, like, what's the worst that I can happen is I don't go clear now and I've already got one medal. I was like, it's a bit of a bonus, like, show for me.
You do a bit of reading as well, don't you? Do you want to like talk about that a little bit? Has that been helpful for you, do you feel?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I've got into reading. And like we've talked about, I've done some, like, the books that I read, I do think have definitely helped, because the things that they talk about in the books, like, it is obviously aimed at for you to learn to cope with things in life when it doesn't go your way, or how to deal with that. And that has definitely helped, but in terms of probably in a way that it wasn't like aimed at to help me.
Yeah,
it's just I read those books and then it sort of just stayed in my back of my mind, and then sort of when it comes to those moments, it sort of works.
I think that's the good thing about those books as well. So do you want to firstly name the book, because people are going to be wondering what it was? Do you want to name the one you've been reading a bit of?
Yeah, so The Daily Stoic was one of my favorite books that I first got into. It was recommended by a friend, and that was, you know, really, really good for me. That I just like tiny things each day, but the way that you read them, I think it's not so much that you're reading them and memorizing them. I think that once you've read and you've took some of the things in, they just sort of get taken in.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to those times in your life when you're doing things, they sort of, it's like reminders. But
you've got to make it work for you, haven't you? You've got to like make a point of trying to relate things back. And like you said, it's not necessarily a direct thing for agility until that moment comes. And then you can make it relate to agility. It kind of helps you outside of it as well, doesn't it?
Definitely. I think one of the ones like, as an example, ones is just to not worry about things that you can't control. Like, if you're stuck in traffic, you can't control that. Just sit there in the traffic. Don't let yourself get mad or sad. Yeah. Same though with the agility. Like, that was a big one for me. Like, if I'm about to run at AWC and I want to go clear, like, I'll go clear or I won't go clear. Like, I know I can control it by doing my best, but really, like, anything can happen. Like, I'm not going to stress over that fact when I'm there. Because there's still a level of like outside control that you can't do anything.
Yeah, of course.
They're dogs.
Like, even Clippy, like, all you Clippy can do is all you can do is your best in that moment. And I get sometimes that gets kind of like as a thrown away statement, oh, just do your best. But it's not. If you are able to focus on doing everything that you can possibly do, then you've done your job. Definitely. And like you said, things can happen. They can slip. They can, you know, whatever Definitely. The case may be. As long as you can go in there and focus on your job, then you've done what you can.
Yeah. Yeah, that same for me when people say do your best, and some people go, oh, yeah, but like that answer. But generally, that is all you can really do at the time, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the problem with it. It gets used so often. And
yeah, sure.
People haven't actually done their best. It's just one of those things that they say. It's
Yeah.
From my point of view, it's like when, you know, I can relate to the fitness, the dog agility, whatever you want. And someone says, oh, didn't do my set. If they say like, oh, I didn't do my sessions this week, but I tried my best. And I can say, but did you actually try your best? Like, did you do everything that you could do? Do you know what I mean? And it's not that I'm trying to question them, but I want them to realize, oh yeah, actually, I'm just making an excuse because I didn't necessarily try my best. And they might have. And if they did, then that's actually fine as well. But like, my thing is always, you got to be honest with yourself, haven't you?
Definitely. And I think that also is the other thing, like when it goes back to what did you do for me mentally to get myself ready? If I was really honest with myself, like at those points 3.0 and AWC, like I knew like Clippy and myself were running the best we probably ever ran in our career. So like that really helped, as in like I had no doubt, as in there was nothing that I was unsure of at the time. Like we'd done everything that we needed to do in the build-ups. Like I knew she could do the skills or the exits on a dog walk or whatever it was, which definitely helps because it's just reassurance. So you don't even think about questioning yourself.
Yeah, you've done all the work you can, so then it's up to just the event and on the day, isn't it? I would say a little bit of luck comes into it, but equally, I don't want that to take away from, you know...
I'm still, like, a massive believer of that. Like, again, you just, like, can't anticipate a dog slipping and having a pole.
Yeah.
Like, you need a little bit of luck sometime just for something like that not to happen.
Yeah, for sure. Agility, the last few years, it's changed a lot, I would say. And regarding, again, the way that you personally prepare for like a season now, you can be far more selective with regards to what you are doing. And that will obviously help in the long run because Clippy only gets to run certain types of courses. Now, I know we've spoken about that a lot. What do you see the direction agility is going? And then how do you think it'll make a difference for us as handlers and trainers? Where do you see it going?
Oh, it's changed so much, hasn't it? Like, I think this year, do you know what? Well, this is like a really funny statement that always makes me laugh. Like, with Clippy, this year, I think we won one champ ticket. So then, like, sometimes when I'm running champ or something, people will be like, oh, yeah, you don't need it. It's like, I have actually only run one, like, won one. Like, but that is, again, just because it's not because I've been doing lots, but I purposely chose not to run courses so many times, and not always because there was anything wrong with them. Just maybe it was even just equipment. Like it wasn't the same equipment in the build up to EOs or AWC. That was like a massive thing.
Yeah.
So I actually, even on the way up to EOs, I don't think I barely ran on any other equipment other than the same contacts that was at EOs, which meant we missed loads of runs. But stuff like that. I think that there's going to be a big divide coming in. And I think that's a good thing, though, because I think that agility is important for people that don't want to do the higher level as well. Like it is a hobby for a lot of people, and it is a hobby for like people like us, but I think in a different way. Like this is also a career. And I think that I do think that that split, that's a horrible way of saying it.
No, but there's a divide in what people want, isn't it? And it's the same with any sport. And there's always going to be that divide with regards to people who are doing it for enjoyment. And
when
you say that, it doesn't mean that the people at the top level don't enjoy it. But
there
is going to be a difference in standards in any sport. That's just the way it is, isn't it?
Yeah,
some people have more time, and it might just literally be because of that. But equally, it's not a bad thing. Like you said, as long as there is access to it.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that, like, look at England, UK in agility results the last year and coming on a little bit last year, how much we've improved so much in our agility. And that is down to, like, there's a lot of things. Like people are more up to date, people are training their dogs better, people have got younger dogs that have come up, so they've started to get those results with those dogs who have been trained better. But I do also think in the UK now, we have a lot more opportunity to do things that suit our dogs in terms of the big events. Like, just as like a few, there's Iconics, you've got CSJ, you've got the shows that are European simulator shows that we have. There's tons now. There is a lot. Like, if we wanted to really even not bother doing that many, you know, normal standard shows, we've got a good choice now.
Yeah. Definitely getting better, and I think is definitely a big factor in why GB as country was able to be more successful this year, for sure. I think it's like you said, I mean, all of the prep that you did this year, a lot of it was not doing stuff, which seems counterintuitive, doesn't it?
But it's like you it was really
that continuity of having for Clippy that she only was on certain equipment and that, isn't it?
I've never not done so many runs in a year. It's insane. Like, I was near, like, driving 4 hours to a show with just the idea that you might run or you might not run is depressing. But that was more course design as well, that one, because you could tell what equipment was at shows. So that did make things easier. But also, you know, we've got other dogs that I do want to run at shows on that equipment. So sometimes it was driving that far to then not run, like Clippy, for example.
But the argument would be, people would like, oh, was it worth it? Well, you just won both international events. So, I mean, I don't know.
It definitely was worth it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, it was a lot. But equally, there's a lot of people willing to do a lot to win. And you have to be willing to do the same amount, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a lot. And also like that. For me, I learned a lot of like control over to not run a course, even with the course being not particularly that bad. Like lots of champ courses are like really nice courses and they're okay. But at the time, like our ring size is, as you know, different to European. Like the design is naturally going to be different. So some of the courses I even are choosing not to run are nice courses. Like there was nothing wrong with them. But just because it didn't really fit with how I knew what we were going to get at the event, I chose not to, which was really hard because like to not want to get that result at the time, it does. But once you've done a few, you get used to it.
I suppose as well, though, that you got that kind of feedback last year that it was worth it. So it makes it a little bit better for you in the sense that you know that it was worth not doing them. You've got that kind of, you know.
Yeah.
I was right not to do it kind of thing because it's kind of paid off.
Yeah, definitely. After EOs last year, Clippy came pretty close in the final enlarged to podium and except for Brick out the wall. And we sort of did the same plan. So like it was a bit of like once you've tried that out, haven't you? So I knew that it worked. So it's just following the same sort of routine.
Hi guys, Dalton and Jody here from Better Dog.
We have just launched our new product, Better Hydration, the goat's milk hydration drink for dogs.
It's packed full of natural ingredients designed to give them that extra boost whether they are working, competing or just simply enjoy an active lifestyle.
Head over to wearebetterdog.com to find out what it's all about and use your exclusive discount code WRONGENDOFTUNNEL for 10% off.
Because every dog deserves better.
How confident were you with regards to Clippy's overall speed that she would be competitive because it's a new height? So I know that she was competitive in large, but like, did you go in knowing that you had the potential to win? I mean, I know what I thought, but I want to know what you thought.
Yeah, so I obviously knew she was fast. Like, I know Clippy's really fast, but I wasn't 100% sure because after running, this is weird, but Clippy runs much better on large. Like, I can run her much better on large because that's what she's been on her whole life. Like, for 4 years of running her, like, the timing has been on 60 centimetres. It makes a massive difference. Yeah. So then when I was doing a lot of my training on 50, I was less in sync. So I would lose her on turns. So her times actually dropped on 50 to 60 when I ran in my own training because she was a little bit wider. And like the one thing that Clippy does, if anyone ever watches, is she's an extremely tight turning dog. So I did wonder if that would make a difference. And actually in the build up to all these events, which I don't know, like everyone knows this, but I couldn't run Clippy on 50 centimeters. Like I had to do 60 on every session because if we did 50 centimeters for too long in training, she changed so much in her running because she was so used to 60. And we actually like got to a point where in the end we figured out that to do all of my training for EOs and AWC, I had to train her on her normal height and 60. And then her first sessions on 50 were in the, you know, the warm-ups at EO and at AWC. That was the first time she went on that height. So it was really hard to know. Like, that was, I think that's what made it harder to know, because I couldn't do much on 50.
But I think, like, it's good that you didn't really know to do that. It's the intuition of knowing your dogs, isn't it?
Yeah. And that goes back to that again, like, for me, like, instantly I recognized with Clippy that this was better for her, instead of staying too long on 50 and pushing through it, which seems the obvious thing to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's like you said,
seems a bit backwards.
You've got to trust that you know your dogs, and, like, you know, like, yeah, you said, it's good because you obviously, it gives you that feedback that you know what you did was right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If, like, from the competitions this year, you've seen lots of, you know, really good dogs and really good partnerships. If I said to you that you could steal one from every height, are there any dogs that stand out to you?
That's really, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of dogs that I'd want to choose. I don't want to say one and then make it awkward. there's not, I think I say that the height that I most want to run at, I do want an upper medium dog.
I
don't know why. I think it's with Munchie from running at medium for so long. I do miss running in a lower height, you know, second to medium is definitely large. I always want large. Like, large just seems, yeah, it just seems more like, for me, like the height that I like the most. But yeah, definitely medium. I'm desperate to get another medium dog.
So what breed would you think you're going to look at, or do you not know yet? What ones are you looking at then?
I don't know. I think, I don't know if I'd suit a Sheltie, because I don't know, the barking would drive me mad. But then all, like, Munchie and that all make noise.
Munchie's not quiet.
No, so probably I'm guessing it would be a Sheltie. Join the Sheltie crew, I guess.
The Sheltie revolution,
Sheltie revolution. But yeah, I can't say a single dog, but there's some, yeah.
Are you potentially already looking for Shelties in the future, or not quite yet?
It's going to be a long time, because I think that I've got plans at the minute. Then it's gonna have to. I'm gonna have to stick to those plans. But if it's the one height that I always wish that I could run back in, it is medium.
Well, you can lend Mop if you want. I'll lend you Mop, and she can be your medium dog.
Yeah, Mop. Me and Mop, we can take the world by storm.
Oh God, she would take the world by something. That's for sure. Let's move into real life questions. So, like, some of these will still be kind of agility based, because, you know, agility is a big part of our lives now, but. What do you feel people misunderstand about you the most, Dot?
I think some people think that. Well, I don't think a lot of people think it, but I do think that people think I'm, like, maybe this person that has, like, lots of, like I said earlier, lots of plans, and, you know, very, like, I'm going to do this, and this. And, like, I do tell people when I see them, but I'm one of the laziest dog trainers out there. I make sure it happens well, but I am not proactive in making sure, like, it just, not lazy, you know
yeah,
what I
it's
mean.
It's like, it's you're sort more, of like, it's more intuitive, not, isn't it? It's more like you kind of know what you need to work on, but rather than sit down and make a plan, you just get into a session and set things up to train that thing.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, the one thing that always makes me laugh is when I'm training my dog and I'm around someone that I haven't trained with before, and I put my dog in a session and they do something wrong, and they always, like, as in they fail at something, and then I'm just like, it's fine. Like, as in, like, I'm not super over worried about stuff like that. And I think people think, because maybe because your dogs can do stuff, you're always like, oh, they must do it, like, 100% all of the time. Like, I obviously make sure they can do stuff, but I'm not also super precious on the fact that if they did something slightly wrong, it's not the end of the world.
I'd say one of the things that is noticeable with your training is you, even though you're physically capable, you kind of make the dogs do it as well, in the sense that, like, you won't overhandle a situation in training. It doesn't mean you won't do it in a competition, but in training you're they've got to do it, I'm not doing it.
Sure, 100%, especially with the running thing. Like, you get it a lot. If some people say, oh yeah, but you can run really fast, I'm like, I could do that if I was stood still.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they can do that.
Yeah, that's probably what people misunderstand about me the most, is they think that my dogs aren't trained. They think that I just run everywhere.
Yeah, just running. But in competition, of course you're going to run. You're not going to stand there.
Yeah, well, that's my thing. Is, like, I see lots of people, and I think the biggest mistake that they make in a competition is they don't even try. they don't even try to get, like, they're physically more than capable of getting places. And you know, this isn't for everyone, but this is like some of the time I see people and they're like, they will choose to test their dog's verbal discrimination rather than be there when they're already there. It's no extra physical effort to actually get there and handle it, but they just stand off and ask for it. And it's like, long term, I understand maybe they're going to get a better verbal understanding. But for me, competition is, you know, you get them round and you try and do your best in competition.
Oh, like,
I don't know.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely the same, yeah, for sure.
What do you think you're most proud of then?
Oh, this year for me is my big best, probably my best year of my life. Like, as in, not in terms of like, not like actual living, but as in things that I've ever done or achieved.
Yeah, I know it's like, a stupid question after you come back doing those things from the world. Yeah, but like, yeah, you know.
Not just though, the agility, like we've set up a business, we've done agility, good agility results. All the dogs are doing really well. Not even just Clippy, like I've got, all of our dogs are running really well. They're really cool dogs. They're really like, happy dogs, but it's just been a really good year. Yeah. There's nothing that I can change. Like I wouldn't want to change anything.
Going to the opposite side of things then. Over your time in agility or out, but what do you feel has been like your biggest failure, and then what did you learn from it?
My biggest failure, I do maybe not just agility, but maybe like wasting time. So like I'm quite guilty of when I not now, I'm much better, but getting into the routine of once you're comfortable of doing something, just sitting at that point, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like I'm quite, I think I have like a nature or like I'm like that as a person. Like once I get comfortable and doing something, I can quite easily waste a lot of time just doing that without looking to improve. And I think previously, maybe 2 years ago, cause it wasn't just this year, like I've been I've made a lot of changes over the last few years. But definitely going back a couple of years is that just being it's not lazy because I've never been lazy, but
it's
getting
about
comfortable,
not pushing yourself, and being comfortable isn't
yeah like I can easily get happy with something that's going well, but there's still lots of things that I could be doing better, but I'm doesn't even come into my mind, but I've made a lot of changes and now that I try not to be like that now.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's worth people knowing, actually, kind of explain some of those changes and what you think has been some of the biggest, had the biggest effects on your life. What you know, explain a couple of the things you've done. I know you've done more than a couple of things, but what do you say, let's say two or three big changes and then how they've affected you?
Yeah, so when we talked, I think even prior to EO last year, I think it was before that, it was a couple of years back or maybe even more than that about fitness and health and stuff. Like I had like achy knees and I'm only like 32. And it wasn't that I've got a knee injury. My knees just ached, which is not, I don't think, you know, like that was like something for me, like, hold on a second, like, why am I starting to ache like this? So like health, fitness, that was obviously, and I think with anything, if you start with that, that leads to the other stuff. Like I don't think if I had started my fitness like doing with you or in the first place, I probably would have then made the changes that I've made now, because I think that's just a good base, isn't it?
It just leads on to other things, doesn't it? If you're making an effort with your health and fitness, it makes you think, well, if I'm making an effort here and then I'm not doing it here, I'm kind of throwing away all of the benefits I'm making. So one of the other things that I think is interesting for other people to hear is, what about your diet? What have you done with your diet?
Yeah, diet's huge, a massive change. Like last year was just eating healthy, as in just, you know, much healthier greens and good food, no processed food. I still eat binge, like I still binge, I'm not gonna lie, like once a month maybe, like it's impossible not to.
I think it's healthy too.
But it's still, you want it. Yeah, you want it. Like I don't think I would want to ever not enjoy myself.
That's it. I think you need to have enjoyment with your diet as well. So if you're just strict all the time, then there's no enjoyment, is there? So it's that balance, isn't it? It's that balance.
100%. And then in this year, like I made a lot of changes. Like I don't really eat as many carbs now. Like no breads, no pastas. So more like a keto sort of paleo sort of style diet. And that for me works absolutely amazing. Like that, this year for me, doing those sort of changes has been the best thing I think I've ever done. Just not even in terms of my health, but like we spoke about the other day, like my mental clarity is just clear. Like I don't get brain fog or not as tired anymore.
And I think the important thing for people to understand here, which I think is actually important, is that you've come to this off your own accord. Like we kind of spoke about diet and like that kind of stuff about kind of cleaning it up with regards to processed foods. Definitely. But once you started feeling the benefits of doing, I call it like 75-25, where 75% of the time you're eating whole nutritious foods and then 25% of the time having things that you enjoy. That's kind of where you first went. Sure. But then when you felt the benefits, you kind of took it further then, didn't you?
Yeah, for sure. Like now, like I still, like I said to you, I still will have like the odd binge and stuff like that. But it's like the benefits that I get from feeling how I do now, just naturally, you don't even sort of want to eat like all the things that I used to sort of, you know, do. Like I put those pictures on the other day and you could see a massive difference. But like, even if like now I thought to myself about like, not even how I would looked as in like size, but how I felt at the time, like, you know, waking up in the morning, I would just be like not even able to really think straight until like 12 o'clock or something, because I'm so sort of like waking up throughout the day. But to even, once you start feeling different, it almost feels like I used to function at probably like 20%. And now like I'm running at like full speed. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I can't explain it.
Until it is one of those things that I think people would have to kind of feel the benefits of.
Definitely. You can't explain.
The problem is that it's such a cliche of you are what you eat. But it's because it's very, very real. In the sense that, like, I think once understand how much of a difference it makes, it's almost a bit like, oh, well, you know, I feel like I can't not do these things because I'm kind of chucking myself under the bus if you're doing everything else that you can be doing, isn't it? It's, like, massive. Outside of agility, then, do you have any other hobbies or anything that takes up your time?
No, I'm super boring. Don't really do anything other than agility.
We've got the business like, that's taken up a fair bit as well.
Yeah, that's taken up a lot of time. And I do think that, not that I don't feel like I've sort of like reached the peak in my agility, because I'm always going to want to do well with like my other dogs as well and Clippy again. But I do think like I've also in terms of, it'll be nice to try and take on like a new adventure as well alongside. I'm not saying that the agility is not going to be like the same part of my life that it's always been, because it always will be, but I do think that's almost like it's a hobby in itself, isn't it? The time that we're doing this other stuff is taking up as much time. I don't think there's any time for any other hobbies.
No, could take up fishing, not as much, for sure. Especially like I say, when you're trying to compete at a certain level, you can always think of extra things to be doing, can't you?
Yeah, and like I enjoy it. It's perfect for me. Like, I guess you could say like the hobbies, like when you're walking your dogs and stuff like that, that's like a hobby, isn't it?
Yeah, when you're out and about.
That's all still part of it. It's like full time.
Yeah, for sure. You into music? What music do you listen to?
Oh, music. I don't know. Not really.
No?
Don't really watch TV either. No, none of that. Maybe the odd Netflix.
How do you relax?
I'd sit with the dogs, chat, or I think usually by the time that we get to sit down in the evenings, I think it's like 7:30, nearly 8. And then recently, actually, another thing I'm trying to do is trying to go to bed earlier, because that's been a big thing for me, getting 8 or 9 hours sleep. And to do the only way you can do that and get up early is go to bed by 9.
Yeah. Part of your morning routine now is your little ice bath, isn't it? How's that been?
Yeah, ice bath, that's it. So I thought that was a bit of a joke if I'd watched someone else do it months ago, but that is genuinely addictive. It's not addictive because you enjoy it. You really don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, but and once you're out of it, you enjoy it. And then there's like this weird, I get that this weird like sort of withdrawal symptoms if I miss it. Like if you know you can't do it in one day, you're like really like, oh, that's so, like you get like really like annoyed that you can't do your ice bath in the morning.
I think like leading on from kind of like you mentioned the stoicism and the books of the Daily Stoic, and like one of the things that they often say is to force yourself to do difficult things. And that's where I see the benefit in the ice bath. Is this?
It's really difficult, isn't it, to
force yourself to jump into a freezing cold water
on
a day when it's freezing cold. But it's the sense of accomplishment you get afterwards. And that if you can force your mind to, like, make it okay to do it, then, you know, you've got control over your body, haven't you? And that carries into other daily tasks and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, it is the feeling of once you've done it, you've like, wow, I managed to... Something as simple as that as well, as sitting in that. Like, that seems so easy when you think about it, but it is genuinely in the... Like, get up at 6 a.m. and force yourself to go and sit in a bucket of water. You do question it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You question a lot of things when you're in there, don't you? Time slows down and it's just like,
I set a timer on my watch now and prop it up to watch it, because if I don't see that timer, it feels like I've been in there 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like...
I chuck a song on that I know is like 3 minutes long, and I'm just like singing the song and just waiting for the time to finish so I can get out quickly.
In the beginning, I thought that my timer was broken. It just wasn't going off.
Yes, got to be something wrong with the timer. It's not just the fact that I'm freezing my nuts off. What then in everyday life annoys you or makes you angry?
Overthinking. Oh, I am so good at not overthinking. I'm so good at, if something needs doing today, I'll do it tomorrow. But I know that's not always a good thing, but that does help me in other ways.
What makes you angry though? What makes you mad?
When other people overthink.
When you see other people
stressing over the most silly things, because I think it's because I don't understand, like, why are you worrying about that?
Yeah.
Like, come on. That is crazy. It's the most silly thing ever. But I think that's why that came back to the dog training earlier, where we spoke about it. When I see people doing stuff and I'm just like, not that it's wrong, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just like, why? I don't understand why.
Yeah, you can see that in the long run, you don't think it's going to be better. You're not gaining anything from worrying about it, kind of thing. I get what you're saying.
Not being able to overthink, I think, is something that you can't really... I think some people just don't overthink. I do think you can help yourself by not overthinking, by trying to not do it.
Yeah.
But I do think that if you don't overthink, that's... Yeah, it's good.
Okay, we're going to go into a quick fire round now. Hopefully these won't take too much thought. This should just be a quick answer kind of thing. What did you have for breakfast?
Nothing.
Nothing today? What was the last thing you Googled?
God, Agility Plaza.
Was it? Yeah. What's your most used emoji?
The laughing face.
Do you play any instruments? Probably not, if you're not into your music.
No instruments.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Yes.
Do you?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
Any tattoos or any planned?
Nothing, none of that. No, I did want to get one tattoo once, but I don't know, didn't really see it through.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Invisibility.
Would it, you dirty bastard? What are you planning?
Yeah, there is multiple uses for invisibility.
All right, so in this situation, I always end with this. I've asked your superpower. I've got a superpower, and it allows you to speak to each of your dogs for like 10 seconds. I'm going to let you, what would you tell your dogs?
Wait, all of them?
Well, you can tell me, well, you don't have to do all of them. Pick a couple if you want, if there's any particular ones that need telling some in.
I don't know, what would I say? Jesus, I don't know what I would say to them. Like, Crush, can you listen to me a little bit more sometimes? I don't know. I don't know what I would say. That's a hard one to answer.
Yeah, well, you know.
Never thought of it.
Maybe you've got some burning question you want to ask one of them or whatever. I don't know.
Oh, God. I can't even think on the spot now. Now I'm overthinking.
Now you are overthinking. All right. Well, maybe we'll just wait and come back to it in season.
I probably just tell them to keep doing what they're doing and not change anything.
Yeah. Just keep it up.
Please don't change. Just stay doing what you're doing.
All right. Well, firstly, thank you so much for giving us some of your time. Like I said, I know I was taking the mic at the beginning, but I do appreciate it. I know you're a busy man, especially with the business and that now. Before we go, is there anything that you want to let people know about, or how can people get hold of you if they want to? What, you know, tell the people what you need to tell them.
Well, obviously, don't forget, if your dog needs a drink, we have a great hydration. We've got goat's milk hydration drink. And like, again, we made this for our dogs. Like, this is not something that started as in like we want a huge product that's corporate. We made it because it's designed to do what it does, especially for our competing dogs.
And what's it about? Tell people so, why it's useful, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it's basically, we were stuck in, have I got time?
Yeah, go on.
So we made it, one, because one of our dogs had a basic story, but they had a UTI and we needed to get them to drink more. Getting your dogs to drink water is a hard task. Like, if you just ask your dog to drink a bowl of water in front of them, 90% of the time, they're probably not going to drink it unless they're genuinely thirsty. But same as humans, like, you don't even know when you're thirsty. Like, sometimes you could be needing to be hydrated and you don't even realize that you're thirsty. So that was the biggest thing for that. And then also, when we're going out and getting our dogs to drink, a lot of other drinks that you would give to your dogs to make them drink don't have anything extra in them that's really that beneficial. It's just to make them drink and keep them hydrated, which is really important. But we've chucked in some extra ingredients that is really beneficial to them in everyday life.
So go on to the website wearebetterdog.com.
Yeah, We Are Better Dog. Have a look on there. Everything's on there. The information, I won't bore you with it all now. There's lots of cool things on there. It's a really important area that I think that people don't look into enough. Hydration, you know, like if you're dehydrated and you try and run a course, see how you feel. Imagine if your dog's dehydrated and is trying to run a course and run over a dog walk at 1 second. It helps.
Yeah, mental clarity and hydration is important for sure.
Yeah, it really, really does help. And everyone takes a lot of care with their diet and dogs' diets. And then that can all be for not nothing. But if, you know, you're extremely dehydrated, it's going to have a massive effect.
For sure. All right. Well, again, thank you for giving up some of your time today, Dolph. I do appreciate it. And I'm sure everyone will enjoy that, listening to you. Do you want to say goodbye to everyone before we go?
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Nice to be here.
Cheers, Dolph. Cheers, everyone. Speak to you soon. And that is the end of the podcast. Thank you for taking some time out of your day to listen. I really hope you enjoyed. If you think you might know someone else who would enjoy, feel free to pass on all the information and share the podcast with them. And get involved on any of the social media platforms. It really helps the podcast grow, and I really appreciate it. See you in the next one.